We're holding on at the bottom of Yud Gimel on the base. We were in the middle of a discussion the Gemara was having of when exactly do we're going to learn at the beginning of the next parak. Well, we learned so far that there's three sets of fasts that they do for rain. There's the first three fasts for the tzibur, that is, besides the fast that the individual do. There's three for the first three, there's the middle three, and then there's the last seven. And we said each one is increasingly more stringent than the previous one. The first one is basically like most tiny tzibur nowadays. You're allowed to wash, you're allowed to wear shoes, you're allowed to do malacha, you only have to fast during the daytime hours, etc. The second three are more like Tisha B'Av in that sense. And then the last seven, we said that in addition they masrian, which we're going to talk about in the Gemara what that means, and they close up the stores, food stores. So we're in the middle of discussing what exactly are the differences between these various series of fasts, and in particular, is there a difference between them as far as the extra brachas that the Chazan says in Shemoneh Esrei? We're going to learn in the next perek tomorrow that the Chazan on Tainus Tzibur would say six extra brachas in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. So when do you do those? Do you do them only on the last seven? Do you do them on the middle three as well? So we left off with three lines from the bottom that the Gemara had said that in the middle fast they don't say the 24 brachas, only in the last seven fasts. So now the Gemara asks, "V'loy, you're telling me that not? V'atanya, we learn in Braisa, ain ben gimel shniyas l'sheva achronis. There's no difference between the second set of three fasts and the seven final ones. Elo sheba elo masriyin v'nelo l'sachanuyas. Except that on the last one we Masriyin, which, as I said, the Gemara is going to talk about later, whether that means blowing shofar or whether it means saying anenu, and v'noylan atachanuyas, and they lock up the stores, which implies hol de vrei and zeved zeshavin, which implies, as far as everything else, then they're the same. Or actually, Rashash wants to say that maybe the Gemara had actually meant to say hol chof dalad, as far as the 24 brachas, 18 regular ones plus the six extra ones, then they're the same, and the copyists or the printers or whatever by mistake expanded chof dalad into kol divrein. Anyway, either way, the point is, it seems to be that they're the same as far as that. So what are you telling me? They don't say the extra six brachas for a total of 24 in the second set of fasts. And if you're going to answer Hachanami Tana Vashir, you could answer like we answered yesterday in connection with a different braisa that contrasted the first and second ones. Okay, the Tana doesn't have to list everything. He lists some differences and leaves out the rest. But he's saying, ain vain, there's no difference between them except such and such, which implies that's the only difference. These are the only differences, the two that he mentioned. Ask the Kisra, ain vain davka. You're telling me you want to think that whenever a Mishnah or a Braisa says ain vain, it's an exclusive list. It means there's no other differences except these ones that we listed. Varshi or Teva. I can bring you another one that the Braisa left out, but there's a difference between the middle fast and the last fast. The Teva. We're going to learn in the Mishnah tomorrow that they would bring out the Teva, which is Aron Kodesh, into the street, into the city square, and they would daven there. They don't do that the first six fasts, they only do that the last seven. So you see, there's another difference, which the Braisa is not mentioning. So yes, if it's not mentioning that, it could very well not be talking about the 24 brachas. The Gemara says, no, that's not really proof. Imishum teva lav shiruhu. If you're saying that it's just because the Braisa left out the teva, then that's not really called that it left something out, because mila ditzina katani. The Braisa is only listing things that are done in private. Mila dipahesu le katani. It's not listing things that are done in public. Taking out the teva, by definition, is a public thing. The masriyan, for example, the masriyan, whatever masriyan is, whether it's shofar or whether it's anenu, takes place in shul during the middle three fasts. So it's more of a private thing. It's not out in the city square.
And
so,
the teva was what exactly?
The teva is Aron Kodesh,
right?
They would take it out to the street. But that kind of thing, the braisa is not listing. Yeah, we'll talk about it tomorrow. So therefore, you still would seem to say then that there must not be a difference between the middle fast and the last fast as far as the brachas, because if we're listing mili ditzina, it should have listed that. It doesn't list the teva because that's something in Bahasia, that's something in public, but it should have listed the brachas. If it didn't list, it implies that you do say the brachas on all ten of those fasts, the three middle ones and the seven last ones. And Amar Ravashi Masnitin Nami Deka. In fact, we can see that from the words of our Mishnah. Dikatani Ma Elu Yiseres Alo Rishonis. The Mishnah said, in what way are these last fasts more stringent than the previous ones. Elo sheba elo masriyin, ben elo tachanuyas. Only that on these they masriyin, they cry out and they lock up the stores. Abu b'chol divrei zevezeh shavin, which implies the same as in the Braisa. It implies that everything else, or again according to Rosh Hashanah, it should have said here b'chof galad, then they're both equal.
According to Rav Ashi.
The Rav Ashi is pointing out, because Rav Ashi's version of the Mishnah, and actually there are some of the Rishonim who say that that should have been the version, the version of the Mishnah that we had printed over here was, Hare Elu Yiseiris Al Rishonis. Behold, these last seven have a greater stringency over the previous one, these two things. That doesn't imply that that's an exhaustive list, though. Rav Ashi's version of the Mishnah, and like I say, some of the Rishonim actually have that as their girsa in the Mishnah, is Ma'elu Yiseiris Al Rishonis. In what way are they greater? Which implies it's an exhaustive list. That we're listing all of the differences. So if it doesn't list any difference about 24, then it implies they're the same. So you might answer, well, not necessarily. Again, the Tana might have mentioned some things, and he left out other things. You can't. Because he explicitly says, in what way are they different?
Meaning,
these are the only ways in which they're different. In what way implies, whatever I'm going to tell you is the only ways in which they are different. Namely, these two things. But not the brachas. Why? You're thinking the word ma'elu means that it has to be dafka, that it means only these and nothing else? Again, like we said before, the Mishnah also left out the fact that you only bring out the teva, the last seven fasts. So there's another difference. So you see, even though ma'elu, you say this, you're still not listing something else. So yes, it could have also left out the 24. And again, the answer is imishum teva lav shiuru. No, here the answer is different. That when it comes to the teva, that's not considered leaving something out. Mishum dechachashiv lo be'idach pirka, because the Mishnah is going to mention that at the beginning of the next parak. The next parak is a direct continuation of our parak. Our parak is talking. Our last Mishnah over here talked about the last three, about the middle three, and then the last seven fasts. The next parak begins Seder Tanias Kesar, and it describes the Seder, what they did on the last seven fasts. So it's a direct continuation of it, and there it mentions that they take out the teva.
So
we didn't mention it here because we know we're going to be mentioning it the next Mishnah. So therefore that doesn't prove anything. Well, the Gemara says Hashtad also Lahachi. Well, okay, now that you reach that conclusion, Esrim Ba'abar Nami Lab Shiruhu, then you can say that saying the 24 brachas is also not considered. It's also not something that the Tana left out. Because again, it's mentioned in the next parak. So you really don't have a proof one way or the other so far whether the 24 brachas are said on the middle three fasts or only on the last seven. My havi Allah. Okay, what's the bottom line? What is the halacha? The my havi Allah actually is referring back to. We got into this whole discussion as a side thing. We got into this whole discussion of whether you say the 24 brachas on the middle three fasts or on the last seven. We got to that as kind of a side thing. Because we were trying to figure out when do you say aneinu. Do you say it as a separate bracha between Goyal Yisrael and Refrainu, or do you say it in Shema Tefillah as an expanded version of the bracha? So that's the Mai Havi Allah. Amar Shmuel Bar Sisratai. Mai Havi Allah. So what's the bottom line? How did we get into this discussion? Because we were trying to figure out there was a brisa that implied that the difference between the Yachid that said that the difference between the Yachid and Tzibur is one daven 18 brachas and one daven 19. And we wanted to say, well, 19, doesn't that mean that you say aneinu is a separate bracha? And we said, no, if you're talking about saying a separate bracha, then you have 24, you have the six extra brachas. And that led us into this whole discussion of when exactly you do and don't say the extra brachas.
So coming back to that now,
so my havi Allah, what's the story with that? Amar of Shmuel bar Sisratai, v'chein amar amchi ba'ashi amar rab, ben goyel l'roifei. You say aneinu between goyel and roifei, between goyel, between baruch ha'teshem goyel Yisrael and refeinu. He says that you say it in Shema Tefillah. And the halacha is that the Yachid says it in Shema Tefillah. The Chazan indeed says it between Goyal and Roifei. And if he forgets it there, then he says it in Shema Tefillah. When the Chazan davens Shil Shema Tefillah, he also says it in Shema Tefillah.
The Yachid
when he's davening, right. The only time you say it as a separate bracha is if you're davening by the offer. Right. Yeah.
And that's the halacha.
That's what we do, yeah.
Another thing, another difference between the various groups of Tanaim. The Tani Chada, one Braisa says, one Braisa says that pregnant women and nursing women fast on the first fast, but they don't fast on the later ones. Another one says they fast on the later ones, but not on the earlier ones. And the third one says they don't fast either on the earlier ones or on the later ones. So we have three braises that seem to contradict each other. Because first of all, the whole thing of these fasts is the Rabban. Mrs. Eshaz Man Grama really applies to things that are right. But besides that, over here, we're talking about they're joining in the Tzara of the Tzibur. I mean, they themselves, the same way as we say, for example, when it comes to reading the Megillah, women were involved in the Nes Chanukah, they're Chayev, because Achen Hayabaris on Nes, Pesach, etc. Here also, they're involved in the Tzara. The drought affects them also. So they should have to, but we have three different Braises that seem to contradict each other. What is it? Amar Rav Ashi, Nekoitim Sa'aisa B'yadcha. What you should do is you have to understand that what the three braises are not actually contradicting each other, but rather take it that what the braises are referring to is they do have to fast the middle set of fasts. And we count them kulu. That way all the braises work out. Namely, the point is like this, Rashi says, when we say rishonus and achronus in these various braises, we don't necessarily mean first versus last. We mean earlier versus later. So for example, relative to the seven last fasts, the three middle ones are called Rishonos. We have that in our mission also, right? The Yisraelis are the Rishonos. Relative to the first three, the middle three are the later ones. So that's when the first Braisa is saying that they fast on the first ones and not on the later ones, that means they fast on the middle group of fasts, but not on the last one, not on the group of seven. When it said the second Braisa said they fast on the last ones, not the first ones, I mean the last, not the last, but the middle ones, the ones that are later relative to the first ones. And when the first one said neither, when the third bride said neither the first nor the last, it means, but the middle one. So that way it all works out. Now what's the logic, Rashi says, why indeed should they only be fasting the middle three fasts? No, what's the logic that pregnant and nursing women should only be fasting the middle three fasts? Rashi says like this, the first three fasts, you know, it's still the beginning of the process. Like, so the Eibishter's anger is not yet showing itself so severely. The rain is a little bit delayed, that's why they're fasting, but it's not like there's yet been a serious drought, so they don't have to fast yet then. The last seven fasts, on the other hand, because it's a group of seven, it would be very hard for them to fast. Mainly three at a time, you have Monday, Thursday, Monday, and then you have a break until the next one, but the seven is in a row, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday, Thursday, Monday. That would be very hard for them. So therefore, you don't impose on them to fast those. But you do impose on them to fast the middle three, because the middle three, it's only three. And on the other hand, already the situation is getting serious. The first one, the situation is not so serious yet. The Rambam, on the other hand, passes differently. The Rambam evidently had a different Girsa in the Gemara over here, that pregnant and nursing women have to fast the last seven. Not the first three, not the middle three, but the last seven. That was his Girsa here, apparently. One thing is, the post can point out, and this is true also nowadays when we have the various four fasts throughout the year, that even when pregnant and nursing women are allowed to eat on the fast, they still, you know, they should just eat the bare minimum that they need in order to keep themselves and their baby healthy, but not overindulge. Yeah, I mean, well, basically it depends. Basically, it depends on her health, and it depends, you know. I mean, if a woman is able, it's one of those things you have to ask a Rav, really. It's a case by case thing. Well, you need to ask Rav. You need a physician to tell you the medical facts, and you need a Rav to tell you based on that what to do. True, but on the other hand, a nursing mother fasting doesn't necessarily pain the baby. And it really depends how her milk supply is doing, right? So, you know. Anyway. Then the Mishnah said, Ma'elu Yiseris al Rishonis, in what way are the last fasts more stringent than the earlier ones? Elisha Ba'elu Masriyan, we said that on the last fast they Masriyan, V'noilim Sachanuyas, and they lock up the stores. So, my Masriyan, what does it mean the word Masriyan? The word Masriyan can have two different meanings. It can mean Meloshin Trua, so it can mean you blow a shofar, or chatzotzeris, we'll talk about that soon, or it can mean crying out, which would mean saying an extra tefillah. So what is it?
With a chatzotzeris, you can also have a tefillah.
Sure.
chatzotzes are trumpets. You can blow a tekiah or a teruah with them, same as shofar.
So, Rabbi Yehuda amar b'shofaris, Rabbi Yehuda b'reder of Shmuel b'shilat, b'shmei d'rabba amar b'anenu. There are two different opinions. One is that it means blowing the shofar. One is that it means saying anenu. Now, Rashi points out, when we say anenu over here, we do not mean anenu that we were talking about before, the one that we say in the middle of Shemoneh Esrei. Because that already you were saying from the beginning, in fact. Rather, we're talking about sort of like what we have at the end of Slichas, the tefillah that we have over there, Anenu Hashem Anenu, Anenu Lekenu Anenu, that whole tefillah, that's what we're talking about, that kind of thing.
Why do we call it Mashrim?
Because it's crying out. You're not just, I mean, we read it on the Siddur real quick as a Chazan is saying it, you know, but really it's supposed to be, you know, it's a cry to the Eivishter, Anenu Hashem Anenu, you know. So the Gemara says, Kasal Kadaitach, the Gemara is now assuming, Man de Amma ba'anenu loy Amma b'shofaris, that Rav Yehuda b'reder of Shmuel b'shilat, who says that you say anenu, means only anenu, not shofar, or Man de Amma b'shofaris, loy Amma ba'anenu, and vice versa, Rav Yehuda, who said that you say, that you blow shofar, that says that you do not say anenu.
What do you say about
freedom
and shofar? You mean only people blow shofar at the same time?
Not necessarily. It can mean one person gets up in front of the tzibur and blows. So, Masriyim, you know, collectively, I mean, there is a trua done for the tzibur. We're not talking the whole Jewish people all together in one place. We're talking each city. We're in each city.
Very, very powerful.
Yeah.
To blow shofar for fast.
Yeah. Now, actually, Rishonim talk about the question. We learned in Rosh Hashanah that the proper thing you're supposed to blow on fast days is tzotzris. So why are we talking over here about a shofar anyway? So that's one answer, is indeed the chatzotzers are when there's a Beis HaMikdash, shofar otherwise. There's a lot of other different answers, including one interesting one, the Gemara mentions in a few places, we had it in Shabbos, we had it in Sukkah, that after the Churban, the names of some things were switched around. What used to be called a shofar came to be called a chatzotzer, and vice versa. So when our Gemara says here shofar, it really means chatzotzers. Yeah. But that's one answer. There's a lot of other different answers, including that it depends on whether there's a Beis HaMikdash. Nowadays, actually, on a tiny tzibur, we're not talking about a tiny tzibur, we're not talking about the fixed ones like Shavuot or Tammuz, we're talking about ones for rain, but nowadays, even when they declare a tiny tzibur for rain or for other tzaras, Rahman al-Aslan, they don't blow anything, neither shofar nor chatzotzer. So the posts can have a bit of a hard time explaining why that is. And again, there's a few different answers, one of them being that this whole concept of blowing only applies when you have a formally designated tiny tzibur. Which, in order to do that, we said the other day, you need a Sanhedrin. No Sanhedrin, no formal Tainus Tzibur. No formal Tainus Tzibur, then no blowing at all.
Sanhedrin needs
special. Not necessarily, no. You just need smicha, but it needs smicha ish mipiyish going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, and we don't have that.
Or just everyone agreeing again.
According to the Rambam, but that was pretty controversial. Anyway, yeah.
Well, it's going to be very hard to get back.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a discussion for another time. Yeah. So you're saying, in other words, that you have these two different opinions. One is that Masriyin means blowing shofar, or chatzotzris, as the case may be. The other is that it means saying the tefillah anenu Hashem, anenu elokeinu, anenu. So what do you mean? V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, ein posin misheva taniyas al tzibur. We don't do less than seven taniyas for the tzibur, meaning the last group has to be seven. Shabahen yudchef hasrois. On those tanesim, you have 18 hasrois, 18 blowings of the shofar. The similar dove Yericha, and a way to remember that, so you know what Hasra means.
Seven, you have 18.
So one second, I'll tell you the calculation in a second. The similar dove Yericha, and a simon for that is Yericha. What happened by Yericha? They marched around
seven
the city
times.
Seven times, and every day they blew shofar, and then the last day they marched around seven times. They blew shofar, they didn't say Anenu. So therefore, by remembering...
How do we know?
Because the Pasuk doesn't mention it. So by Adrab, actually, the Pasuk specifically says, Yeshua tells the people, every day you march around, you blow the shofar, and you don't say anything. So they weren't saying Anenu. So by remembering Yericha, you can remember what the word Masriyin means. It means blowing shofar. But Yericha shofar is Hava, and Yericha, they blew shofar. So this would be a contradiction to the one, to Rav, who says that Masriyin in our Mishnah means Anenu. Now, so what do we mean Yudchet Hasroi? So there's actually many, many different girsas that Rishonim have of what the number is over here. The straightforward way of assuming it is you're adding six brachas to Shemoneh Esrei, we said before. Each bracha you blow tekiah through a tekiah, 6 times 3 is 18. The problem with that is that actually we're going to learn in the next perek that they also had an expanded version of the bracha Re'enu Vanyenu. So they had an expanded version of Re'ena, and then they had another six. So you had a total of seven times that they blew shofar. That should make 21. So in fact, Hagoyes HaGerot says that the girsah over here should be 21. Different other Rishonim have different girsahs. Rabbeinu Gershom, for example, has a girsah of 13. And he calculates because you had every other bracha, some brachas they blew tkia trua tkia, other ones they blew trua tkia trua. So therefore, if you count it up across all the brachas, you end up with 13. And there's a few other versions of what it should be. Another version that some Rishonim have is that the number should be 7, namely one for each bracha. Either because you're only counting the truas, either they blew truas, tkia for each one, and you only count the truas, or we had an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda at the end of Sukkah, we had the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, the Tana, who said that tkia, truas, tkia is considered one long thing. It's not considered three separate blasts. So you have 7 altogether, one for each bracha, yeah.
One opinion says 18, 3 times.
So you have either 21, 18,
21,
13, or 7.
13 or 7.
Yeah. Whatever it is, the point is still the same. That we see by the Brice mentions Yericho, so that proves we're talking about shofar. Okay, there's no question when it comes to blowing shofar, everybody agrees that that's called hasra. When we say masriyin, there's no question you have to use shofar. The machlokas is, when in other places, when we talk about Masriyin, when we talk about those other kinds of poranos, other kinds of disasters that are happening, where it says Masriyin, do we do shofar or do we do anenu? Mar sava kori l'asra, so Rav holds that can be called asra, so therefore for those other things, no, therefore you can do just anenu, and that you just do anenu. You don't actually blow the shofar. Well, Marasava like Kari Lasra, whereas Rabbi Yehuda holds that no, just saying Anenu cannot be called Hasra. If we say by these other things, we're going to have a list in a minute, that if it says that you have to do Hasra, then it means you have to actually blow shofar. Just saying Anenu is not enough. So, Lamanda Amaba Anenu Koshken B'Shofar. The one who says that you can do Anenu would agree all the more so. You want to do shofar because you don't hate, but you at least have to do Anenu. Well, Lamanda Amaba Shofar is Ababa Anenu Lai. But the one who says you have to use shofar means only shofar. Just crying out on Anenu is not enough for these things.
First opinion says you have one or two.
You can do one or the other. The other one says it has to have to be shofar.
And also Anenu, or just one or the other?
No, he's saying that you could do one or the other.
One or the other.
Yeah.
So you can't do both?
Not that you can't do both, but there's no need to. I think my act Vatanya, but we learn in a Braisa. I mean,
you cannot conclude from the word hasra that it means both.
So one second, we're going to try to prove from a braisa that the word hasra specifically means shofar. No, specifically means shofar. Because v'hatanya, didn't we learn in a braisa? This is later on in the Masechta. U'sh'al kol minei poranias ha'misagshes, any other kind of bad situations that are coming about, kagon chikuch, like for example, where there's an itch, people have a skin disease. Chagav, or chikuch literally means like rubbing. Rashi says like mischakis bakoisel, like an animal rubbing against the wall. So it means there's some kind of skin disease going around that actually the Mephoshim talk about. There's a different Gemara in Bava Kamma that mentions that there is a type of skin inflammation which is more serious than this one, and which you do something for on Shabbos, unlike what we're going to talk about over here. So there's a distinction made between whether it's dry boils or wet boils.
You're talking about a whole group of people?
A whole group, yeah. Like it's going around in the city, yeah. Anyway, if you're in chikuch, for example, a skin inflammation, chagav, or grasshoppers, we're not talking about over here the kind that strips the land clean, because then that's a serious thing. Here we're talking about things that are less serious, but nevertheless, you still have to do something for them. So here we're talking about it's like the kind of grasshoppers, you know, they'll eat some of the produce. They're not going to eat all of it. Or zvuv, flies, vitsira, or hornets, viatushin, or mosquitoes, or gnats. Rashi says the problem with the tsira is they sting people, and yatushin is they get into people's eyes and noses.
Flies,
we said, zvuvim. Yeah. Zvuv, yeah. Vishiluach nechashim. Tsira is hornets. Or a plague of snakes or scorpions,
We'll talk about in the third paragraph what it means shiluach exactly. Snakes and scorpions are always dangerous. But there are certain times when like we see like they're being more vicious than usual. That's shiluach. So all those kinds of things, lo hayu masriin, they did not do masriin, elo tzayakin, they just cry out to Hashem. Now let's consider mitzvah akubah. Crying out obviously means verbally. So hasra be shofar. Word hasra must mean shofar. So in other words, the Braisa is saying when it comes to a drought, you do hasra, you do shofar by the last seven fasts. On the other hand, these things that we just listed over here, the skin inflammation and the gnats and so forth, I mean, they're serious enough to do something about. You have to cry out to Hashem, but you don't blow shofar. So we see that hasra means shofar. How could Rav be saying that? It means anein. The answer is tanoi. It's actually a machlokes of tanoi. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, al elu masriin b'Shabbos, about the following things you can do masriin on Shabbos. Al ir shekifur gayis, about a city, this is a Mishnah in the third perek, about a city that's been besieged by an army, by troops, or nahar, or that's been surrounded by a river, that the river is flooding and they're in danger. Or about a ship which is sinking, being tossed about in the water and is about to sink. Rabbi Yossi says you can cry out for help, to call people to come and help with the situation, but not for crying out for tefillah.
Why are you saying that?
Because this is what we're talking about on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yossi is saying like this. When it comes to calling people for help, sounding the alarm so people can help, sure. I mean, Pesach Nefesh is there for Shabbos, but to blow shofar on Shabbos, to cry about them on Shabbos, to daven for them on Shabbos, who says? Rashi says, who says that our tefillahs are going to be so effective? Who says we're such tzaddikim that our tefillahs are going to be so effective? In general, we don't daven for people's needs on Shabbos, even when we make a mishaberach. We just say Shabbos imelizik or prokrov alav. It's not an appropriate time to be crying out. So Rabbi Yossi is saying, if you're crying out just to daven to the Eibishter, don't on Shabbos. If you're crying out so that people should hear and come to help, that's Pekorach Nefesh. That's Rashi's first explanation. Then Rashi's second explanation is that Ezra means that Rabbi Yossi is saying that the Tanakhama is saying that Masriin, that you can be crying out in public, in shul, and Rabbi Yossi is saying no, not in shul, just in the privacy of your house. Because it wouldn't be in Kavadik for Shabbos to be doing it in shul.
So in that sense, you'll be quiet.
Well, so that's the thing. B'mai, we have to consider. Ilema b'shofarit. Are we talking about, when we say masriin over here, are we ma'aleh the masriin b'shabbos, are we talking about blowing shofar? What do you mean, shofarit b'shabbos mishari? You're not allowed to blow shofar on Shabbos. Elala v'anenu. Obviously, we're talking about saying anenu, v'kori lo hasra. And this braisa is calling it hasra. So yes, we have a machlokes. What hasra means? We have the previous braisa that implied that hasra is shofar, because it said it as opposed to tzaka. Here we have. Clearly, it means verbally. It's saying anenu. So it's a machlokes anenu. So very well then, Rav and Rabbi Huda can go according to the two different opinions. Shmaminoch, that proves it. The Gemara tells the Shnei de Rabbi Huda Nesia have a tzaira. During the time of Rabbi Huda Nesia, there was tzara, not a drought, but some other kind of tzara. Rabbi Huda Nesia. Rabbi Huda Nesia is the grandson of Rabbi Huda Hanasi. There were several Rabbi Huda Nesias in that period. They were there because there was a grandfather and then there was a grandson. Which one it is over here, it's hard to tell. Anyway, Gaza Tlas Esra Tanis. He was Gaza 13 Tanisim, like we said in our Mishnah. V'loyini, and they weren't answered. Sabra, the Migzat Faith, he thought to be Gozer more. Amalei Rab Ami, so Rab Ami tells him, don't. Hare Omru, the Chachamim said, Ein Matrichen, it's a Tzibur, Yoyis Midai. You don't do more of a Tircha than that on the Tzibur. 13 is already enough for them. And that's similar to what our Mishnah said. You do 13 fasts for the Tzibur, and if it's any more than that, if you still haven't had rain by that time, then you don't keep having the Tzibur fast. Instead, you have the Yechidim go back to fasting.
3, 3, and 7,
yeah.
Of
the winter? We're going to talk about that soon, how far into the winter we've gotten. We'll get to that in a few lines. Amar Rab Abba, Pedro, Chirba Abba, you should know something, Rab Abba is saying. Rab Ami d'Ovad Lagami, who d'Ovad. When Rab Ami told Rab Yehuda Nasir this, he was actually doing it for his own interests. Meaning, Rashi says he didn't want to fast any more than that. Or Rabbi Hananel says a little bit different. He couldn't fast any more than that. So therefore, he convinces Rabbi Yehuda Nesia to not do any more than that. But actually,
and
that this idea that you, that when it comes to a different kind of tzara other than rain, that you don't go beyond 13. Rav Ami, in other words, really the halacha is not like that. There are other Rishonim who say, usually you know, there's a few other places where the Gemara says about a Tana or an Amor L'Gamri who da'avad, and usually the explanation is it means he went according to his own personal opinion, but not necessarily the halacha. That the halacha is that way. Anyway.
Nicer
than space. Well, okay, but, you know. Elahachi Amr Rabbi Ba'aba Amr Bechon, because this is what Rabbi Ba'aba said in the name of Rabbi Yechon, Lo Yishonu Elah L'Kshamim, this that we're talking about, that there's a limit of 13, is only as far as rain. When it comes to other kinds of disasters, they keep on fasting until the Eibush answers them. Unlimited. So therefore, yes, Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya should have done more than 13 fasts. Tanya Nami Hachi, we learned similarly in Braisa, when they said that you have three fasts and then another three fasts and then seven, Loi Amr El Shamim, that's only talking about as far as rain. But for the other kinds of disasters, Misanin Bahochan Aji Anu, they have to keep on fasting until they get answered. So we confirm that. The question is, Lema Tevet Yurt to Rabami. Well, in that case, do we have a clear contradiction to Rabami? Melo, okay, Rabbi Chiba Abba is saying, in the name of Rabbi Yechon, and fine, Rabbi Yechon is an Amora, Rabami is an Amora, too, they're allowed to argue. But if we have a Braisa that says not, then that would seem to clearly contradict Rabami. The answer is, Amalach Rabami, Tanoihi. Rabami can tell you, it's actually a Machlokas Tanoim, this point, whether you do more than 13 fasts for other kinds of things. You do not declare more than 13 fasts for the tzibur. Because you're not matriach the tzibur more than that. Divrei Rebbe. So fine, Rabbi Ami is saying, I'm going according to Rebbe. On the other hand, says that's not the reason, that it has nothing to do with that. It's because the time for the first rain has already passed. Meaning, what did we say? We said a couple of Mishnayos ago that when did they begin this whole series of fasts? If it hadn't rained by Rosh Chodesh Kislev, the normal time of Revi'i Rishona is in Cheshvan time. By now you've gone through Kislev, you've gone through, Rabbi Gershom actually makes a detailed calculation of it. By now, with 13 fasts, and you have a little bit of a break between one and the next, by now you've gone through all of Kislev and all of Tevis, and you're already into the beginning of Shvat. At that point already, you're not going to be asking for the Revi'i Rishona anymore. Under normal circumstances, the Revi'i Rishona time is long since gone. Rain that falls now, okay, it's not going to be a simon kala like already later in the year after Nissan, but still, it's not going to do very much good at this point. So there's no sense in, so Rav Shimon Gamliel saying, in that case, then limit it to 13. Don't be matriach with tzibur. More than that, because at that point, really, the year is fallen anyway, basically.
Just for Kshamim.
Other things, other kinds of Peronius don't have a particular season. So there's no reason, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, to break off. So very well, then Rav Yochanan is going according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, that when it comes to, there's a difference between rain and everything else. Rav Ami is going according to Rebbe, that there's a limit of 13 for everything.
Is there a difference if, like, there's a little bit at the beginning, but, like one day or so that there's a bit, and then the rest of time.
So we're gonna have in the third parak the circumstances over here. First of all, I mean, this whole concept of the 13 fasts is only this whole schedule of fasts that we had is only if the Revi'i Rishona didn't come. If it came, then there's other situations which we'll talk about in the third parak. There can be a case where there's a long break between one rain and the next. There can be different other kinds of cases, but those are different. Those are, when we talk about rain ones over here, we're talking about the normal kind of rain ones where there was no rain at all. New topic, sort of new topic, because it sort of goes back to what we were talking about, davening for rain in Shemana Esrei, but it also has to do with the Taniyas. For rain. The people of Nineveh in the north of Iraq, nowadays it's like the near Mosul. Yeah, it's very much in the news now. Yeah. They sent a message to Rebbe. What about people like us? We need rain even to Tkufas Tammuz. In Eretz Yisrael and in Bavel, people, places that have a Mediterranean climate, you only need rain until the end of Nisan. And like the Mishnah said, any rain any time after that is a simon kola. We in Nineveh, which is a more mountainous area, we need rain even in the height of the summer. So what should we do? Are we considered like Yechidim, or are we considered like Rabbim? What does that mean? Are we considered like individuals, and therefore we would daven for it in Shemayat Tefillah. Just like any person who needs an individual thing for himself adds it in Shemayat Tefillah. So also, if we want to say the same Talamata during the summer, we would have to say it in Shemayat Tefillah. Or we consider like Rabbim because we're a whole city, or because Hashanim, and then we would say it in Baruch Aleinu like everybody, like they do in Eretz Yisrael during the winter.
Shalach lahu, he sent back to them, ki yichidim damisu, you're still considered like yichidim, even though you're an entire city, you're still considered like yichidim, over shemeh tefillah. And you say it only in shemeh tefillah.
Why?
Because they're only one city. Now, let's learn through till the two dots, and then I'll tell you an interesting machloikas that came up about this issue about 700 years ago in the times of the Rosh. So, you might ask, Meisvi, I have a contradiction. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Emesai, when do we say that there's this schedule for the Tanias? Vizman Shashanim Ketiknon, when the years are normal, when you have the harvest takes place in Nisan, planting takes place in Cheshvan, Yisrael Shruin Alad Mosan, and the Jewish people are living in their land. So you go according to the Eretz Yisrael Bika schedule. Alv Vizman Azeh, but nowadays, Hakol Lefi Hashanim, it all goes according to the years, Hakol Lefi HaMakomos, and Hakol Lefi, everything goes according to the places, and Hakol Lefi Hazman, everything goes according to the time. And Rashi actually says you don't not Gerdes, the words of Hakol Lefi Hazman, but whatever it is. The schedule of Tanias for any given place depends on their particular needs. If you're living in another country and you need rain at other times, then you set up the schedule of fast at that time. Amalei, so he answers him, you're trying to bring a braisa as a contradiction against Rebbe, who's paskening for the Bnei Ninveh that they're considered only like Yechidim, which, okay, I mean, Rebbe's talking about davening and Shemoneh Esrei, but saying the same Talamotzer. The braisa is talking about fast, but the Gemara is assuming that they're the same thing. If you have a place where they're allowed to fast for the rain during the summer, let's say, because they need it, they would also be entitled to say the same Talamotzer during the summer because they need it. But still, you're bringing a braisa against Rebbe. Rebbe, Tana Hu Polik. Rebbe is Tana. He's allowed to argue against the braisa. My Havi Allah, so what's the bottom line? What's the halacha? Rav Nachman Amar Birkas Hashanim. Rav Nachman says that in that case, people like in Ninveh are allowed to say the same Talamotzer in Birkas Hashanim in Baruch Aleinu if they need rain in a different time of the year. Rav Sheshe Sama B'Shemeh Tefillah. Rav Sheshe says they still have to say it in Shemeh Tefillah. V'Hilchasa B'Shemeh Tefillah. And the halacha is they can only say it in Shemeh Tefillah.
Is that applies only for the people in Iraq?
Now, here comes the thing. We learned a few days ago that in Babel they used to start 60 days after Corpus Tishrei, December 4th or 5th nowadays. And that we learned that everybody in Chutz La'aretz does like that. But the Rosh pointed out it's not so simple. The Rosh lived in Germany, and later on he moved to Spain. He discusses in one of his Trubas, he has a long discussion of it, he says, already when I was living in Germany, I always wondered about this. We're davening for rain, what, only from late November or early December or whatever until Pesach time? What are you talking about? Here in Germany and in Europe, it's true we have more rain than they do in Eretz Israel, but still, you have to have rain right after the crops are planted in the fall. Otherwise, the mice are going to eat them if they don't start growing right away. And you're telling me you stop davening for rain Pesach time? What are you talking about? The grain over here, the crops over here need rain. They need more rain between Pesach and Shavuot. Otherwise it'll get destroyed. Why shouldn't we be davening for rain during the times we need it? The Gemara is saying over here in Ninveh. Ninveh is one city. This is a whole country. You're telling me whenever we have Eretz Yisrael versus Babel, the halacha is always like Eretz Yisrael. The halacha is always like Babel. He says, fine, that's as far as things of Isser and Heter and whatnot. We're not talking, it's not a matter of Isser and Heter. It's not that the Bnei Eretz Yisrael and the Bnei Babel are arguing when's the proper time to daven for rain. In Eretz Yisrael, they needed a certain time. In Babel, they needed a different time.
In Germany
needed a different time. We should be entitled. We're a whole country of our own. We should be entitled to ask for it in the same Talmud. I mean, in Baruch Aleinu. So he says his Rebbeim, I guess meaning Maharam Rutenberg and others, argued against him when he was in Germany, so he never went ahead with it. But he says, when I was coming to Spain, I passed through Provincia, southern France, Provence. I saw that they had to start davening for rain on Zion Cheshvan, like they do in Eretz Israel. I thought that's a very good idea. And now he says, now I'm living in Spain. He writes the whole history. He says, here in Spain, this year, there was a terrible drought. The year was 1313, Hayalah from Kufayin Gimel. There was a terrible drought. And then I took the opportunity to start to re-argue this point of mine from many years ago, that look, you know, we need rain. Why are we only starting and stopping over then? And he says, I actually told the chazan, get up over there, and then when you're davening Shemoneh Esrei, say the same Talamotzer. It became a huge controversy, of course, because, you know, everybody argued against him, you know, changing Minig Avesenu, etc. In the end, the Rosh writes in his Truva, he himself had to concede that fine, you know, if this is how people are going to do, then okay, this is how it's going to be. So the halacha has not been established like the Rosh, except for one thing. there is, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, that we do respect the Rosh's opinion to the following extent. If a person in one of the places where they need rain, let's say, for example, you're living in a place like Germany or Spain or whatever that needs rain, that needs rain after Pesach, and you forget and say the same Talamotzer in davening, there are opinions, there are poskim who say you don't have to daven over again. Because even though in Eretz Yisrael it's a Siman Kola, but even though in Eretz Yisrael it's a Siman Kola, and therefore you should be saying the same bracha, but if you forgot and said the same Talamotzer, you don't have to daven over Shemoneh Esrei. Other poskim still argue with that as well. And so the halacha actually is that in that case what you should do is you should daven a Tfilas Nedava. You should daven a voluntary Tfilah again afterwards. And this is how it's brought in Shulchan Aruch. Now, then, further in history, 300 years after the Rosh's time, this became a whole new issue for Jews living in the Southern Hemisphere. The very first Shiloh that's ever known to have been sent from the Americas was a question by the Jewish community in Brazil in the 1600s to one of the Rabbanim in Turkey, in Salonika, I think, asking, yeah, their seasons are reversed to ours, what do they do as far as Mashiach Baruch and the same Ben and the same Talamotzer?
Any answer was?
So he said that the Rosh is 300 years earlier.
Right.
They asked one of the Rabbanim of Salonika, I think it was, or Istanbul or whatever, one of the cities in Turkey of their time. He wrote a Shiloh service called Torah Chaim. So he said, I think, that nevertheless, you know, given that the Rosh's opinion has not been accepted la halacha, then you still, if you want to say it, you'd have to say it in Shemei Atvila. And during the Eretz Yisrael of winter, which is your summer, you can't be saying the same bracha either. You have to be saying the same Talamotzer because they're saying it in Eretz Yisrael. If you don't need rain over there, then fine. So you won't say it. So any time you need to during the year, you'd say it in Shemei Atvila. You'd never say the same Talamotzer in its place in Baruch Aleinu. I think that was what he said. There are many different opinions among the Achronim about this question, and I believe to this very day there are actually different minhagim among Jews from the Southern Hemisphere, what they do as far as whether they say the same Talamotzer on the same schedule as we do in the Northern Hemisphere, or whether they just say it in Shemei Atvila. But on the other hand, you could argue that they're davening primarily for Eretz Yisrael and for the Northern Hemisphere, which has most of the Jews in the world. So they're the, you know, for themselves, if they need rain a certain time of the year, they can say it in Shemei Atvila, but it can be argued that they should be saying the same Talamotzer during their Northern Hemisphere winter, even though they themselves may not need rain at that time for the sake of the Jews who do. The Mishnah said, "Vasheni matanim chashecha." That we said that they closed the stores, the food stores, on the last seventh fast. We said on Monday they can open the door a little bit as it's getting dark, so that people can come and buy food to break the fast. Over Hamishi kolayim, and on Thursday they're allowed to leave the store open all day, but make void of Shabbos because of the covet of Shabbos. So now they have the question: what do you mean, hechi katani? Bebeis matanim chashecha. On Monday we're saying you can only open the store a little bit when it's getting dark. Over hey kolayim is make void of Shabbos. On Thursday though, you can prop open the door. You can leave it a little bit open, but instead of only towards the evening, you can do that all day. But it's thought to be only a little bit open, not wide open. Adoma b'sheni matin, or maybe it means on Monday you have to keep it mostly closed. Over chamishi poskin kolayim kolayim. And on Thursday though, you can keep it wide open the whole day. So in other words, it would be, is it in other words that Thursday has one advantage over Monday or two? We know that the Mishnah is saying all day, but all day you can keep it wide open, or all day you can keep it a little bit open, half open, ajar. Toshma, b'tanya, b'sheni matin ad-erev, a b'raita clearly says, on Monday they can keep the door a little bit open in the evening, or chamishi poschen, polayim kolim, make my Shabbos. On Thursday they can keep it open all day long because of Kavod Shabbos. So we see it clearly means completely open. Hayulo shnei pesachim. If a person has two doors on his store, pesach achad v'nayal achad, then he should open one and close the other. Because then you don't need both of them open. Hayulo itzva keneged pischa. If he had a bench in front of his store, pesach kedavka v'enachoshes, then he can open up normally and doesn't have to worry because now with the bench in front of there, what's inside the store is not as visible to the people outside. So Rashi says that this last part is referring to Monday. That Pesach Kedavka means you can even open the store normally on Monday, because what was the whole reason Rashi said why you have to keep the store mostly closed is so people don't look inside while they're fasting and feel bad. If you have a bench in front of you, it partially screens off the door anyway, so then you can keep it wide open. The Rambam explains differently. The Rambam explains that we're saying even on Thursday, this person Kolayim Kolay has certain restrictions. If you have two doors, you can only keep one of them open. Then the Mishnah said, "Avru elav leinanu," that if all 13 fasts pass and they still have not been answered with rain, mamatin mamaso matan, they reduce or curtail they're buying and selling, or rubinin rubinitia, and they're building and planting. Tana, we learn in a braisa, it doesn't just mean any building and planting. But binyan means binyan shal simcha, means a building of joy, and natiya means also natiya shal simcha, means a planting that brings joy.
Meaning what?
Ezer binyan shal simcha. The point of base chasnas l'sanai. What's a binyan shal simcha? Is, for example, building a wedding house for a son. People in those days would build when their son is getting married. They would build a new house that he's going to live in, and they make the chuppah and the yichud room there, and then he'd live there. Ezer and natiya shal simcha. What is natiya shal simcha? This is somebody who plants an avarnaki of kings. What is an avarnaki? Rashi says two explanations. One is they used to have royal families had a minhag in those days that when a prince was born, they were when a prince, or I guess the pasha's crown prince, was born, then they would plant a tree in his honor. And when many years later he was crowned as king, they would use that to make him a new chair or a new throne. That's one explanation. So then that's a vinyan shall say, that's a natiya shall simcha, you're planting it for joy that an heir to the throne is born. Second explanation, Rashi says that varnaki just means a big shady tree. It's meant for like the king to walk around, like to have a shady spot to walk around or sit under or whatever. So either way.
Or a protected
tree. Yes. But either way, it's a thing of simcha. It's not just, now we're not talking about planting a regular tree on the sidewalk.
And I think it's sort of that question of people
that's in Gittin, it talks about over there in connection with Tur Malka. Similar kind of thing. The Pasha's, I think it's a Persian word. No, it's a Persian word or something.
Yeah.
Then the Mishnah said, Rishaelos Shalom, that you're also not allowed to greet each other during this period. Tananabanan. Chaverim ain't she'elos shalom b'neihem. Chaverim, meaning Tamer Chachamim, there was no greeting each other with shalom during this period. Amei Oretz Shasholin, on the other hand, if an Amei Oretz says hello to you, Machzun hem b'safar rafo b'kovid rosh. You answer them like with a soft voice and with a heavy head. Like hello, to show that you're in a sad state. The Amei Oretz is not gonna take it the right way if you don't answer him at all. But at least yeah. The Hindus Atvin and the people, or the Shemar Chachamim, would wrap themselves up, Yoshvim, and they'd sit, Ka'avelim, like mourners of Chamanudim, and like people who are in Nidui, Kivneadim and Azufim Lamakim, like people who've been yelled at by Hashem. Adji Rachma Alem in Hashemayim until the Ebishter sends them Rachmanus and gives them rain. Amar of Allah, in this connection, in Adam Choshev Rashoi Lipel Aponov, an important person is not allowed to fall completely on his face, Elim Kenenek Yeshua ben Nun, unless he knows that he's going to be answered like Yeshua ben Nun. And this is actually why, when we technically in Nefilas Apayim, that we do after Shemana Esrei in Shachos and Mincha, really Nefilas Apayim, by definition, should mean falling on our faces on the floor. Now, we can't actually, if it's a stone floor, there's a different issue, Evan Maskis, but even if it's a wooden floor, you should be able to. But based on our Gemara here, that is why we don't. That's why we just put our head down on our arm.
How should we do it otherwise? Should we just...
Otherwise, you would have to actually bow to the floor. Yeah. But here the Gemara is saying, you're not supposed to do that unless you're going to be answered like Yeshua ben Nun. Why not? Rashi says, because what happens if a person does fall on the floor like that, and then in the end the Ebishter doesn't answer him, people are going to make fun of him. And Marsha adds, it's not just that people are going to make fun of him. In that case, you could argue he could be moichel on his cupboard.
But
Ben Yehoyada says that actually people are going to think that Nefilas Apayim himself is worthless. That's Ben Yehoyada says that part. Marsha says that people are going to think, "Ain't Teichik Kibari, this person, he looks like a tzaddik, but he must not be if the Ebesh is not answering him." Where do we see that Yeshua fell on his face and was answered? Shenema vayoyim Hashem al Yeshua kumloch. The Ibishta says to Yeshua, get up. Lomazat the noichal apanecha. Why are you falling on your face? This is after the battle for the first battle for Ai. Shortly after they invaded, after they came into Eretz Yisrael, they fought against the city of Ai. 36 people were killed, and Yeshua and all of Canaan and everyone are distraught. And he rips his clothes, falls on his face, etc. And the Ebisha tells him, get up. What are you falling on your face? You should know there's been a terrible Aveda done, and that's why I'm not helping the Jewish people. And this was the story with Achan stealing from the spoils of Yerichai. But we see, Yeshua fell on his face.
Why was it a terrible Aveda?
Because the Jewish people are responsible for each other. Kol Ha'Yisrael 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 Ha'Yisrael. He broke a cheirem. Achan, a fellow from Shevet Yehuda.
Right.
He stole a bunch of different things, a bar of gold, a couple of pieces of clothing, I forget, whatever it was, anyway. But so the Ebishter tells Yeshua, you gotta deal with that situation. But we see, the point for our Gemara is we see that Yeshua fell on his face, and Hashem answered him, Kumloch, get up, you've been answered. So we see only if a person is on that level is he supposed to fall on his face in front of the tzibur.
That's Yeshua.
V'amar Rav Elazar, similarly Rav Elazar says, Ein adam chashev rashay lachkos sack, an important person is not allowed to wear sackcloth, again, in public, elem kenena ki Yehoram ben Achav, unless he's going to be answered by Hashem, like Yehoram ben Achav. Yehoram himself was a Rosha. But in his time, he was a Melech Yisrael of his times. In his times, there was a famine. This was the famine that we talked about last week, the 7-year famine. At one point, the Pasuk describes a woman cries out to him, we're reduced to eating her children. So the Pasuk says he's wearing sackcloth, and his first reaction is to go and kill Elisha for not davening on behalf of the people. But then cooler heads prevail, and he realizes, you know what, I gotta be a little more respectful to the Navi than that. So he says, you know, we're at our wit's end over here. What are we gonna do? And Elisha tells him the Nebuah, which then forms the Haftarah of Parashat Matzorah, that tomorrow at this time the food is going to be so cheap that a saw of wheat or 2 saw of barley will be sold for next to nothing, will be sold for a shekel in the gates of Shomer, and you have the whole story developed over there, how they plundered the camp of the Aramim.
How would he know that his channel was on?
So that if a person knows that he's on the level, I mean, Yehoram was a Rasha, but we see that he was answered with his sackcloth, so that gives us a precedent. If a person knows that he's on the level where he's able to put on sackcloth and the Ebishter will answer him, then he can do that, like Mordechai later on. But otherwise not. Yeah, okay, a person has to know what level they're on. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Vahit kishmai ha-melech ha-zibra yisha, when the king heard the words of this woman, who was talking about eating their children, Vayikras b'adav, he tore his clothes, v'hu over al-achayma, and he's walking on the top of the wall, Vayara amvi, and he has sack al-basar evidoma, and the people saw he's wearing sackcloth on his skin. And again, as the Pasuk says, he ended up getting answered by that. Rabbi Elazar also says, Lo yakol b'kriya v'lo yakol b'nefila. Not everybody gets answered by Hashem when they rip their clothes, and not everybody gets answered when they fall on their faces. You need to be on a certain level. Namely, and it also means, for example, that you have to know what level they're on. There's different cases in which you'll be answered. Namely, Moshe v'Aaron b'nefila. Moshe and Aaron could be answered by Hashem by just falling on their faces. Yeshua, but Kalev, Bikriya, where's Yeshua and Kalev? I mean, later on, Yeshua was the leader, and he was able to fall on his face and be answered, but right now, Yeshua and Kalev, about the story of the Meraglim, are still Talmidim of theirs, and they have to rip their clothes to be answered. Namely, Moshe v'Aaron min afilu d'chti v'yipo Moshe v'Aaron apneim. After the people are complaining about the Meraglim, Moshe and Aaron fall on their faces, and that's it, the Shechina appears. Yeshua and Kalev, Bikriya, but Yeshua and Kalev had to go further. They had to rip their clothes. D'chti v'Yeshua b'nun v'Kalev in yifun akore v'deim. They had to rip their clothes. So we see, in other words, this goes with what we were saying before. Only a person who knows that he's going to be answered is supposed to fall on his face. Yeshua and Kalev are not on that level. They can't fall on their face in front of the tzibur. Instead, they whip their clothes. We're not yet, right. However, Maskif or Abzeira, V'itamer of Shumon Achmeni, Abzeira or of Shumon Achmeni asks on that, what do you mean? Yavakziv Yeshua Kedekamer. If the Pasuk had said Yeshua Ben Nun V'Kalev Ben Yifona tore their clothes, then yes, it would mean they didn't fall on their faces. They only whipped their clothes. In other words, it would be the beginning of a new thought. But when it says vi Yeshua, it means he did both. It means he fell on it. It means that Kalev and Yeshua fell on their faces, like Moshe and Aaron. Vi Yeshua ben Nun, for Kalev and Yefuna, did an additional thing. They also whipped their clothes. Ram Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar says a similar thing as far as when we have a pasuk that mentions different people doing different things. Loy hakol b'kima v'loy hakol b'yishtachavaya. When it comes to how the goyim will honor the Jewish people in the future in Yemos HaMashiach, not all of them are going to be standing, and not all of them are going to be bowing. There's a difference. Malachim b'kima, kings are going to get up in honor of the Jewish people. V'sorim b'yishtachavaya, and sorim, noblemen, are going to bow down. Malachim b'kima, why? How do we get that? The kings are going to stand up. The pasuk says like this. Koyama Hashem goyo yisro kadosh. So says Hashem, who redeems the Jewish people, who is the holy one of the Jewish people. Livzoy nefesh, whose nefesh is scorned, meaning the Jewish people, who the goyim scorn them in galus. Lemesoyev goy, to the nation that are considered disgusting by the goyim. Laeved moishlim, to the one who is ruled over by slaves. There's going to come a time, Leimos HaMashiach, Melachim Yiru V'Komu, that the kings are going to see and get up in their honor. V'sorim V'Yishtachavaya, and then how do we know that the Sorim are going to bow down? Just because the pasuk continues, Sorim V'Yishtachavu, the kings, the princes are going to bow down.
Gracious
princes, yeah.
It's really big.
There's an interesting medrash actually that has an interesting mashal for this pasuk over here. It tells about there's a bathhouse in a certain city where there's a fancy piece of wood that not really fancy a good strong piece of wood that they use as a floor for the bathhouse. In those times, bathhouses need a very strong floor, and everybody's stepping all over this wood while they're bathing. And some people even make a point of stepping on it, you know, bedakta. One day they get a letter from the king that he's going to be coming to town. He wants them to prepare for his arrival. He wants them to take a nice piece of wood and carve out an image of him in honor of his visit. Well, where are they going to find a good piece of wood? They look around. The only good piece of wood is that one that's in the bathhouse. So they take it and they carve it, and all of a sudden all those people, everybody who was stepping all over it before is now coming and bowing down to it. What's going on over here? And yesterday you guys are walking all over, and today you're bowing down to it. And they say, no, because we're not bowing down. Of course, the wood is still wood, but it has the image of the king on it. That's a whole different thing. So the same way, the goyim say, you know, up until now, look at how we were treating the Jewish people. We never really realized what they are. Now that we understand that they have the Eibishter's name as part of theirs, then yes, we stand up in their honor and we bow down to them. However, again, Maskif Lot of Zayda, V'yitamer of Shumon Achmeni, I'avaksiv Vissorim Yishtach V'ukid Kamer. If it said Vissorim with a Vav, that they'll bow down, then yeah, it would be it should take out the word the Vav. If it said Sorim Yishtach V'u, then yeah, it would mean two separate things. The kings do one thing, the Sorim do a different thing. But now that it says the Sorim and they will bow down, it means Havaha Avud. It means that the Sorim are not only going to stand up, they're also going to bow down. So the kings, yeah, will only stand up. But the princes will stand up and then they'll bow down. There's a verse from the Mizrach Magid in Or Torah that says that these two things are the what the kings are doing versus what the princes are doing relate to two different kinds of tzaddikim that exist. There are tzaddikim whose main avoda is hamshacha milamayla lamata, which is rather halam mimata lamayla. Corresponding to them is the kings who get up. Who are sitting and then get up, which is bringing from below up. And then you have the ones whose main avoda is drawing down from above. Hamshacha milamayla lamata. They are the ones who are going to be honored by the princes who bow down onto the floor.
What is higher,
either one. I mean, each one has its advantages. But another one. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Atani Omer. Here's another one. I'll say Loi Hakol LaOda V'Loi Hakol LaSimcha. Not everybody gets Oda, gets light. V'Loi Hakol LaSimcha, and not everybody gets Simcha. Tzadikim la'orah, the tzadikim get light, v'yisharim la'simcha, and the upright get simcha. Tzadikim la'orah, siv orzaru ala tzadik, uli yisharim simcha, dichtiv uli yishrelev simcha. Which Tosfos asks then, I mean, so here you have uli yishrelev. Why don't we say, like we just said by the previous two, that it means the yishrelev get both? And Tosfos says, because then it could have combined them. Here you have tzadikim and yishrelev back to back. In the previous sukkim, you didn't have the Malachim and the Sodom together. You didn't have Moshe and Yeshua together. Here you have the Tzaddikim and the Yishrelev back to back. If it meant that the Yishrelev are going to get both, or if it meant that all of them are going to get both, it would have said, Orzarua la Tzaddik, Orzarua v'simcha, la Tzaddikim v'li Yishrelev. The fact that it separates them means that each one gets their own. Now, so what is it? Rashi says over here that Yisharim are higher than Tzaddikim, therefore they get Simcha, not just Ur. The Rashba, on the other hand, says the other way around, that Yisharim are lower than Tzaddikim.
Why does Rashi say they hire them?
Well, actually, I'll be serious, it may well be. There is, in Hayom Yom, for your Dalet Kislev, there's an excerpt from a sticha of the Rebbe Rashab that explains there's four different levels. The Tzaddik, Yosher, Tomim, and Chassid. And Tzaddik relates to a person who does all the mitzvahs Eseh, but that's within Seder Eshalshalus. The mitzvahs Eseh are things, are parts of the Ebershtiz Ratzin that came down into physical things that we can do.
Wow.
The Yosher is the one who's careful about the Loisesed. Loisesed is Lamailami Seder Ishtalshalus. It's things that the Avishta wants that can't even use. There's no actual act that you can do them. The only way to fulfill what the Avishta wants is to not do something. In that sense, then Yosher is higher. So it all depends how you look at it. But on the other hand, Marsha on the other hand seems to like the Rashba's explanation better, because he says that Ur is a more ruchniyistika thing and Simcha is a more gashmiyistika type of pleasure.
Marizal.
Yeah. What about him?
He says that Yishrelev is much of I think
it's
Kinar, or that's what it is.
Kinar? Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Got that from
Erwin. Hadron Alach Mehemethai.